Okay. We're holding toward the bottom of Mbaze on the Bays, six lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday, the Gemara was discussing the concept that if you have a Stam Mishnah, and then later on, either in that same Mishnah as we had in our case, or elsewhere later on in the Masechta, you have a Machlokas on it, then it shows that Halacha is not like the Stam Mishnah. Conversely, if you have a Machlokas, and later on the same Masechta, you have a Stam Mishnah, according to one of the opinions, then you know that means that Rebbe determined eventually that the Halacha is like that opinion. If you have a machlokas, our Mishnah, for example, starts out with a Stam Mishnah saying that a woman is never allowed to get to have kedushin or nisuin, erusin or nisuin, within 3 months after the end of her first marriage. Then on the other hand, we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi arguing with that. That's a Stam and then a machlokas. We said that indicates the halacha is not necessarily like the Stam Mishnah. On the other hand, the other way around, if you have a machlokas and later on you have a Stam Mishnah, according to one of them, Rashi gives an example from the Babas, for example, from Bava Kama versus Bava Metzia, then we know that the halacha is like the Stam Mishnah. That originally, basically, in other words, Rebbe originally wasn't sure who the halacha was like, so he put the different opinions. Later on, he determined the halacha is according to one of the opinions and put according to that. That's what we're up to. Well, that's what we're going to talk about. The Gemara says, "Misti michva alzu Rababohu akaspe de Rab Nachum Shammai." Rababohu one time was walking and leaning on the shoulder of his shamash of Nachum. Mankit va'alzu hilchasimine. So as they're walking, he's collecting from him. He's Nachum is asking Rababohu for basic rules of determining halacha. Like collecting, mankit literally means collecting. Like the general rules, when you have a machlokas of X versus Y, the halacha is always like X, etc. So Nachum asks him, machlokas v'achkach stammai, what happens if you have in a Mishnah a machlokas and later on a Stam Mishnah? Amalei halacha kastam. So he says, like we just said, the halacha is like the Stam Mishnah. That would be the idea. First, Rebbe wasn't sure, and then he figured it out. What about the other way around? Stam v'achkach machlokas mai, amalei halacha kastam, then it means the halacha is not like the Stam Mishnah. What about, Rav Nachum continues asking, Stama de Masnis and Machloikas Vibraisamai? What happens if the Mishnah just says as a Stam Mishnah? So the Mishnah just states a din without any dissenting opinion. Then in a Braisa you find that there's different other opinions about it. What do you do then? Amalei Allah is the Stam. Nevertheless, Allah is like the Stam Mishnah. We ignore the fact that the Braisa says there's a Machloikas. The fact that there's a Stam Mishnah shows that Rebbe determined that Allah is like that opinion. What about the other way around? He asks, if you have a machlokas in the Mishnah, and then you have a stam, a braisa, the stomach, according to one of them, then what? And by braisa over here, we don't just mean, we quote braisas throughout Shas, and of course, sometimes, a lot of times, we say that a particular braisa is only according to one opinion. We're not really talking about those, because those, of course, you had thousands of braisas floating around according to many different opinions. Primarily, we're talking about the collections of braisas that were known to be authoritative, that were known to be accurate, such as the Tesefta, for example, which was written by Rav Chiya. But then what? Amalei, so Rav Abba tells him, even so, we had this expression before, in Erevin, for example, if Rebbe didn't teach it, then how could Rav Chiya know it? Rav Chiya is Rebbe's Talmud. So if Rebbe couldn't decide who the halacha is like, and therefore he put it as a machlokas, where would Rav Chiya know that the halacha is only according to one of the opinions? So therefore we can't follow that. We have to say for whatever reason Rav Chiya decided to write down only one of the opinions. But nevertheless, you still have to look at the Mishnah and use the usual rules to determine who the halacha would be like in that machlokas. Okay, Amalei, so Rav Nachum asks him, but I can bring you an example from a Mishnah where we see the halacha is not like it. The Mishnah goes like this. It's a Mishnah in Kalim. Masrik shal pishtan shenit lushinav. If you have a flax comb, one of the things they do with flax is early on one of the things they have to do in order to process it, they have to comb it out, get it to lie straight, comb out the impurities, whatever. So you have a comb for that purpose. The comb is basically, before I should explain, it's the body of the comb is the body of the comb is actually Rashi says the body of the comb is made out of wood, and the outer teeth of it are also made out of wood. The teeth in between are made out of metal. So, Masuk Shapishan Shinitlushinov, if the teeth of the comb were removed, Vinishtairo Bashtayim and two teeth are left, Tmeyas. then it would be tome, because if you have two teeth next to each other, you're still able to use it for that purpose of combing flax. But the achas tahora, but if there's only one left, then it's not makabel truma anymore because you can't use it. But if you took out any of the individual teeth by themselves, then they're still makabel truma, because as Rashi says, you can use them for a few different purposes. You can use them. It's a little metal piece like a needle or something.
Why do we ask this question? It's obvious. Don't use for that. Yeah, that if one left, you cannot use it.
No, so that's what we're saying. If the comb only has there's no two teeth left together attached to the frame of the comb, then it's not a makabel truma. Now we're talking about something else. If you pull out one of the teeth, that tooth itself is still makabel truma. It's a metal object which has a use. Rashi gives some examples. You can use it, for example, to trim a wick of a lamp. You can use it to spread out. You can use it like as a peg to spread out clothes or skins or whatever on. Other mafarshim point out you can also use it to scratch on a wax tablet, whatever. It has a purpose. So therefore, they'd still be makabel truma. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, shel tzemer shenitlu shenev achas mibein tayim tahor. If you have a comb for wool, same idea. After they sheared the wool off the sheep, they'd have to comb it at some point, and again, in order to get it to lay flat and get out the impurities and whatever. So there, if every other tooth was taken out, that's tahor, then it's not makabel truma anymore, because again, you can't use it when there's such big gaps between the teeth. But if you have three teeth left together in one place, then it's still makabel truma. If one of those three teeth that's left is the outer side, so in other words, you have the frame which is shaped like a U, like a ches, and they have a bunch of individual teeth between them. So you have one end of the frame is left, the outer side of the frame, and next to it are two teeth. Then it's not makabel truma anymore, because you can't, the frame itself doesn't really function as one of the teeth.
You have
the outer tooth, which is wood,
right.
And then you have next to it are two metal teeth. That's not enough to be able to use it.
That's
part of what the Gemara is going to ask about this Mishnah.
But we said before, by flax one,
you need two together. By a wool one, so far we're saying you need three together. But the three have to be somewhere in the middle. Because otherwise, you'd have to have the end one, which is wood, and then you have the three. You always have to have three metal teeth in a row. That's what we're saying.
You can use it even with three teeth, but they don't have to be metal.
Apparently not. I'm not familiar with the process of combing wool, but apparently you need three actual metal teeth to be able to do the job. Suppose you have two teeth were taken off this comb, vasa on the market, and you turn them into a pair of tweezers, then they'd still be makabel truma, because then they have a purpose. Achas, if you have only one, the skin of a nair, and you prepare it to use it to fix up a candle, to move the wick of the candle to get it to burn evenly, or lemituach, or for stretching out cloth, then it's makabel truma. So you notice there's a few differences between the first and the second part of the Mishnah. First, we're saying that with the flax comb you need two teeth together. With the wool comb you're saying three. The flax one, it didn't say anything about preparing it. It sounds like immediately the tooth is makabel truma even without any further preparation. With the wool one, we say that you need to prepare it.
Yeah.
The Kaimalon, and we know for a fact from Nachum asks, the Ein Halacha Ka is a Mishnah. The Halacha is not like that Mishnah. So first of all, there we have a Stam Mishnah where the Halacha is not like it. And in fact, actually, Mefarshim also point out, the part is that there's actually a Braisa, there's a Tosefta, that mentions there's a Machloikas on this subject. So you just told me if there's a Stam Mishnah and then a Machloikas in the Braisa, we ignore the Braisa, but here we have a Stam Mishnah, there's a Machloikas on it in the Braisa, and we say we don't follow the Stam Mishnah, we follow one of the opinions in the Braisa, we follow the other opinion in the Braisa. How's that? Well, we said the Mishnah comes before the Braisa. But we're saying that no, here we're talking Mishnah versus Braisa. We're not talking within the same Masechta of the Mishnah. There's a Braisa, there's a Tosefta there from Kalim that mentions that there's a Machloikas on this. And we see that the Halacha is like the other opinion, not like the Mishnah. Contrary to what we said, that the Halacha should be like the Sam Mishnah. Amalei, so Rabbi Bo tells him, Bar Minadahi. That one is an exception. Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. Now, which Abaye is doing a Mishnah. In fact, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish both said that this is not a Mishnah. I mean, the halacha is not like this Mishnah. My time. Now, what's the difference? Why is this Mishnah different than all the other ones? Amar of Huna b'Manoach Mishmeder of Idi Breder of Ika Mishum Dekashi Reishal Asefer, because you have a clear contradiction in the Mishnah between the beginning and the end. So obviously there's a mistake in the Mishnah.
So then you consider that any Mishnah that has a contradiction.
Wait. The Gemara is going to go through. Wait. Dikatani shall tsema shenitlu shin of achas mementayim tar. We said that there's not even a stira between the flax part and the wool part. Fine, you can say flax combs are different than wool combs. Within the wool comb part itself, there's a problem. Because, no, not different opinions, there's a contradiction within that itself. Wait, dikatani shall tsema shenitlu shin of achas mementayim tar. We said that a wool comb, if every other tooth was removed, so every even numbered one and all that's left is the odd numbered one, then we're saying it's tar, because you can't use it anymore. Han shtairo b'shtaim, which would imply that if you have two teeth left next to each other, it would be tahar. Two, not three. But then it says only three are left. Is it still mekabel tumah? Gimel ein shayim loy. So there has to be three, not two. So there you have a clear contradiction within that part of the Mishnah itself. So obviously, the Gemara is assuming at this point there must be a mistake in the Mishnah. Therefore, we can't necessarily pass it according to it.
Well, the ratio is not the same as the sefer.
No. We're saying within the wool comb part itself. No, you know, the whole thing is a stam Mishnah. You're not going to say that within the part about the wool comb, it starts by saying every other tooth versus if there's three left. I mean, it's all part of the same thing. So the Gemara asks, my kusha, so what's the problem? Why do you find that so difficult that you have to say the Mishnah is mistaken? Like you said, there are a lot of Mishnahs where we find there seem to be contradictions and we find a way to reconcile them. We can reconcile it over here also. Dilma haba gavaisa haba bayosa. Maybe the difference is you're talking about the inner teeth versus the outer teeth. What does that mean? So Rashi says two possibilities. You have one possibility is that by inner and outer teeth, we mean ones that point in one direction versus that point in the other, that point towards the head of the comb versus that point towards the handle of it. That point towards the handle of it. So the ones that point in the other direction away from the handle, you need three of them in order to be able to do the job properly. The ones that point towards the handle, you can manage with two.
Yeah,
apparently they're not straight. I don't know. I've never seen a wool comb, so I don't know. Or Rashi says a second explanation, which Rashi prefers, is we're talking about all of the teeth do face in the same direction, but what it is you have two rows of teeth. The wool comb looks sort of like a toothbrush with two rows of bristles, two rows of teeth. So then you have the outer ones are the main ones; those are the ones that actually do the job of combing. The inner ones are more just like to guide the wool through to prevent it from flopping down. So therefore, with the outer ones, you need three in order to do the job properly. The inner ones are just to guide the wool through; you only need two. So then that's what it could be talking about, the one set of teeth versus the other. Ela mehacha. So no, rather the problem with the Mishnah is that we said, the first part of the Mishnah about the flax comb had said that if you take any individual tooth off, it's still makabel tumah. The tooth itself, that is, not the comb, we're talking about the tooth now. Which means even if you didn't prepare it, you pulled off the tooth. Right away, it's a makabel tumah because already you can use it for any of the purposes that we talked about, like fixing up a candle or whatever. Ema sefer, but then the sefer about the wool comb says achas v'iskin ol ner ol mitrachmeya, that if you have one tooth, only if you prepared it for the purpose of using it for a candle or for stretching cloth over it, is it makabel tumah. So iskin ema iskin alai. So over there, you're saying you need to prepare it. It's not just automatically makabel tumah. You need to actually prepare it. You need to actually have a specific purpose in mind. Now, we've learned before, we had in Shabbos, for example, the concept, you don't necessarily, when we say v'iskina, doesn't necessarily literally mean that you actually have to do something to it, to change its shape or carve it or whatever. All it is a machshava is good enough, that you had in mind that you're going to use it from now on for some new purpose. But we're saying in the ratio, we seem to be saying you don't even need that. The very fact that you have a little piece of metal over here that's suitable for these surfaces is enough for it to be makabel tumah, even without any special machshava. That seems to be the problem with our Mishnah then. And again, the Gemara asks, so what? Amar Abaye or my kosher, so what's the big deal? Why is that so hard to understand? Dilma haba katayu, haba le katayu. You could be talking about the question. You could be talking about a difference whether the tooth came out with the piece of wood that it's stuck into or not. The way they would make these tomes in those days is they wouldn't, they'd have each metal tooth would be stuck into like a little plug of wood, and that plug would be embedded into the comb. So it depends. If the piece of metal came out with the plug, with the little wooden plug attached, well then you have a handle for it already. It's already usable for some other purpose, like for doing candles or whatever. If it doesn't have the plug, you'd have to actually make one or something, because otherwise you're going to use a metal thing to play around with the flame of a candle. You're going to burn your hand. So that could be the difference. No reason to say that it's a contradiction in the Mishnah. And Amar Rav Papa, and Rav Papa says, here's another reason to say that it's not a problem. My kosher, v'dilma hobe katinta habal limta. You could be talking about the difference whether the teeth are thin or thick. If they're thin, then yeah, you have to make some kind of handle for them, because otherwise, if you try to use them just like that, like using a needle, it'll bend. But if it's thicker, if it's like the tine of a fork or something, you don't need to. You're able to use it by itself. So there's no real contradiction in the Mishnah that we should have to say the Mishnah is mistaken. So we're back to the question, why are we not passing halacha like this Mishnah? It's a Stam Mishnah. There's a machloikus about it in a Braisa, but we said before we should ignore the machloikus in the Braisa and focus on the Stam Mishnah. So why is halacha not like it? But the reason is, the reason we're not passing halacha like this Mishnah is because the expert Tanoim, the ones who really know the wording of the Mishnayos in detail, end off this Mishnah, Zudivir Reb Shimon. This statement in the Mishnah is the words of Reb Shimon. Meaning, in other words, the way that most of the Amoraim were learning it and the way we have it printed in our Mishnayos, it seems like just a Stam Mishnah. But the Tanoim, the ones who memorized the Mishnayos and would say them over in the Bais Medrash, had the Kabbalah that there's a version of the Mishnah out there that says that this is only according to Reb Shimon. Well, then it's not a Stam Mishnah anymore. Then, of course, the halacha doesn't necessarily have to be like it. So, therefore, there's still no contradiction. Going back to the topic of our Mishnah and the Gemara on it, about when you're allowed to and not allowed to get married within the 3 months, Shalach Reb Chiya Ba'Oven. Reb Chiya Ba'Oven sent a message saying as follows, Ma'arsin Teich Gimel, you're allowed to do Erusin within the 3 months after the husband died or divorced her, V'chein Oisim Maisa. And that's in practice, people in practice, the Chachamim do that way. And thus Rabbi Elazar used to teach us in the name of Rabbi Chanina HaGadol that you don't need full 3 months. All you need is Rubei Shal Rishon and Rubei Shal Shlishi VeEmtzai Shalim. You need most of the first month, most of the last month, and the whole middle month. Meaning,
2 months.
In other words, what it means is, Mefarshim explain, it means like this. Suppose, for example, the husband died before the middle of the month. Then you can say, fine, you have most of the month. You have, let's say, he died on the 10th of Cheshvan, let's say. So you can count, fine, 20 days in Cheshvan already counts like it's most of the month, so it counts like all of it, all of Kislev, and once the middle of Tevis has passed, then she's allowed to be married. So it would be a little over 2 months. But as opposed to, for example, it wouldn't work. Suppose instead the husband dies today, what was today, the 24th of Cheshvan. You don't have most of the month left. You only have 6 days of it left. Then you can't do that. Then you need all of Kislev and all of Tevis and at least most of Shabbat.
What's the rove?
Rove of the month would be 15 days. 15 days.
Rove is, well, rove
15 out of 30, right?
15 is not rove, it's hot.
Okay, so 16 days. The vote is, the reason is because many times that can be enough time for, we were talking about yesterday, when a woman's pregnancy starts being noticeable. In many cases, that's enough time. We have, for example, by Tamar, the pasuk says, "Vayhi kimishloish chadashim." About 3 months after she had been with Yehuda, the news starts spreading that she's pregnant. In that case, actually, it was a 7-month pregnancy. And what does kimishloish chadashim say? It means Rashi says over there. It means what we just said. It means parts of three calendar months. So therefore, so that's good enough. At that point, she was already noticeably pregnant.
How many months is the calendar month?
That's what we said. Most of the first, most of the last, and the whole middle one.
It was a
7-month pregnancy, but that's the point. At that point already, you can start detecting that she's pregnant. So if you see at that point that she's pregnant, then you know it's a 7-month pregnancy, and that's that.
But when the question is, there was 4 days.
Hmm?
That it was full days?
No, by Rivka in this week's parasha, it says by Yimlu Yomer Leledes. And Rashi points out that's the difference. Rivka had a full 9-month pregnancy. Tamar only had a 7-month pregnancy. That's why it doesn't say by Yimlu Yomer over there.
Any reason to have to do with why she became pregnant?
Who, Tamar? No, it doesn't matter. I mean, pregnancy is pregnancy. Another case. Ameima shorle oris v'em tishim. Ameima allowed a woman to get to do erusin on the 90th day. Meaning, he didn't say you have to wait full 90 days and then only on the 91st day. He allowed it on the 90th day. Amalei Rav Ashi l'ameima. V'har Rav Shmuel d'ami tavayo. But why didn't Rav and Shmuel both say tzrich l'hamtim gimel chadoshim chutz miyem shemesbay v'chutz miyem shenetzarsabay? No, she has to wait 3 months aside from the day that her husband died and aside from the actual day of the erusin. In other words, the Erusin can only take place on the 92nd day. Mepharshim also discuss over here, what do we mean exactly? Are we talking about over here that you need, are we talking about over here that it has to be three times 30 days, where we're literally talking 90 days plus the 2 days on either side, so 92, or are we talking about 3 months, where some months are 39 and are 29 and some are 30? Anyway. The answer is Ahulin in Menekes Ishbar. That din that was saying you need full months is not talking about this case of Havchana, the business of 3 months. It's rather for the matter of 24 months for a woman who's nursing. We learned yesterday and earlier at the end of the previous parak that you're not allowed to marry a woman who's nursing a baby that she had from her first marriage. And there you have to wait 24 months. The Rav Shmuel, the Amit Abayu, and that's where Rav and Shmuel are both saying, Tzrich l'hamtin chavdalat chodesh, she has to wait 24 months, chutz miyem shenolabay, chutz miyem shenesasabay, aside from the day the baby was born and aside from the day of the erusin. So that's what you need. So that's what Amemar is saying to Rav Ashi. There you need 4 months. There you need 4 months. Here you don't necessarily need 4 months. Because here we can say mix the same kakulay.
Why there we can?
Because there you're talking about you want to make sure that the baby has what to nurse. Here already, if she becomes pregnant, apparently the understanding is her milk will start changing right away.
Maybe at the beginning, but why at the end? After
because that ends up till 24 months is normally how long a baby nursed in those days.
No formula, nothing else.
Yeah. Again, you have to say machlokas whether it means 24 times 30 days or whether. Actually, there's an interesting vart I saw on that that the Me'iri brings. There's a remez to it, and the Torah says the expression like "Savasha di b'chalevimai." We know three times talking about basa b'chalev, but also some mafarshim also say there's a remez in it to this idea of not marrying a woman who's already nursing or pregnant with somebody else's child. The vort is "Tavashel" is gematria 732, because if you're saying you have to wait 24 months of 30 days each, what it is, according to that way of looking at it, you have to wait 2 full years of 365 days each, which is actually more than 12 months. That's 730, plus the day the baby was born, plus the day of the erusin. So you have to wait till the baby is 732 days old. You master it's rational.
Who says that?
Mary. So the Gemara asks, why? You're telling me that in the case of the 3 months, you don't have to wait full 3 months. You can do already on the 90th day. But there was a case where somebody made a suda in honor of his erusin on the 90th day. And Rava made him lose the meal. In other words, he told him, you can't make your party today. The food's going to spoil. Tough luck. You should have waited. The answer is, it was the 90th day. The answer is that he's Surah Nisuin, Havoy. That wasn't a Surah Erisin. That was a Surah Nisuin. So yes, Rava is a Nisuin. Amema is not talking about over here about Nisuin. So there's no question if you do Nisuin on the 90th day, she might become pregnant right then, and you're not going to know if she turns up pregnant afterwards, whether it was from the first husband or the second husband. Erisin, the whole reason why we're asking Erisin is because once you're doing Erisin, you might think if you can do Erisin, you can do Nisuin as well. But we're not going to go so far as to say that we're going to make him lose his whole meal because of that. However, the halacha is when she's nursing, you do have to wait the full 24 months, besides for the day when the baby was born, and besides for the day of the erusin, so the full two years and 2 days. And when it comes to the three chadashim, she also has to wait the 3 months, besides for the day when her husband died, and besides for the day of the erusin, so 92 days.
Full.
full. So nothing about Maimer is that you can do it on the 90th day. You have to wait full 92 days. And that's the halacha. And therefore, when it comes to chalitza also, which we got into this whole discussion because of chalitza, Beis Din won't do a chalitza if it's within 92, if it's less than 92 days since the husband died. Then the Mishnah had finished off chutz min almona. Well, it's not just a matter of scientific advances. That's what we said. Even if we know for a fact she's not pregnant, we said even if she's a kana, even if she's an ailonis, rules are rules. Loi plur. The chama are not making distinctions. Now, we said at the end of the Mishnah, Rabbi Yossi had said that all women are allowed to do erusin, except for an amona, we said, because she's an avelus for her husband. So, chutz min almona, b'chola. Amar Rav Chista kavachomer. So Rav Chista asks, why? Don't we have a kavachomer? You have a place where you're allowing her. You have a situation where you're not allowed to do laundry, and yet mutal aris, and yet we find you're allowed to do aris. The question is going to be, we're going to make a kavach chomer. During the week of Tisha B'Av, as we're going to be talking about, now we're going to have kind of a flashback in this Gemara over here to what we learned in Tainus about the dinner of the 9 days. So during the week of Tisha B'Av, I mean, we Ashkenazim are machmir, what it says in Halacha about the week before Tisha B'Av, we are machmir throughout the whole 9 days, but that's where we'll have to get into that right now. But the technical din is during the week in which Tisha B'Av falls out. So you're not allowed to do laundry, and yet mutar le'aris, yet you're allowed to do erusin. So in a case where you're allowed to do laundry, which is during the 30 days of Avelus, because only during Shiva you can't do laundry, shouldn't be a kavachomer that you should be allowed to do erusin. Why is Rabbi Yossi saying you can't?
We take it from Shiva?
Yeah.
What's the connection? Who says Shiva is stronger than...
We'll get to that at the end of the Sogia, but right now we're assuming that the dinim of Avelus are similar. Maizi, what are we talking about? The Tanan, we learned in Tainus, Shabbos Shechal Tisha B'Av B'Seicha, also the Sapper L'Chabbos, during the week of Tisha B'Av, you're not allowed to take haircuts and you're not allowed to do laundry, or Wachamishi Mutim of Nekvayda Shabbos, but if it's Thursday, meaning if Erev Tisha B'Av is Thursday, which can't happen nowadays Tisha B'Av can't be Friday, but in those days if it could, then you could do laundry that Thursday because it's covered Shabbos. Vitanya, and we learn in a Braisa, Kodem Hazman Hazeh, before this time, which at this point the Gemara is assuming before this time means during earlier in that same week, Ha'amim Matin BSKM, people reduce the amount of business that they do. Tosfos discusses whether it means that people don't do business at all, or just that they minimize it. Anyway. They don't buy and sell. Milivnes or building and planting. We learned in Tainus, primarily it doesn't mean just any kind of building and any kind of planting. Primarily it means building and planting that has to do with simcha, like the building, for example, a house where you're gonna have your son's chasana, or planting a beautiful tree like you're gonna have in a garden over there, whatever. Anyway. But the Braisa continues. You're allowed to do erusin, avaloikonsin, but you can't actually fully marry her. You can't do nisuin. Venosin sudas erusin. You can't make a suda for the erusin. So we see during the week of Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to do erusin, even though you're not allowed to do laundry. So why are we here? This woman is in avelus for her husband after Shiva during the rest of the 30 days. Why is Rabbi Yossi not allowing her to do erusin? The answer is kitanya hi kodim de kodim. That when the Braisa says Kodim Azman Hazeh doesn't mean like you thought it meant earlier, meaning before, during the few days before Tisha B'Av, during the week of Tisha B'Av. It means before that, during the week before that. The week of Tisha B'Av itself is the week that ends with Shabbos Nachmu. So the week before that, the week that ends with Shabbos Chazon, that's what we're talking about, that you're allowed to do everything. But maybe during the week of Tisha B'Av itself, you're not allowed to.
The week that is after what?
Kodim. The week that is before. Before the week of Tisha B'Av. Meaning you have the week in which Tisha B'Av falls out. Let's say Tisha B'Av is on Thursday. Then you have the restrictions, what we think of as the 9 days restrictions, begin as of Motzei Shabbos. Right now we're saying, the Braisa is saying, the previous week before that, the week that in which Rosh Chodesh Av falls out, and which is the week before the week of Tisha B'Av, you're still allowed to do Erusin. The implication is the week of Tisha B'Av itself, you're not allowed to, so the Kavachomer falls away.
Who follows 9 days?
Sfardim in general. Well, wait, we're not finished with the discussion yet. Right now, the Gemara is still in the middle of the discussion. But yes, Sfardim don't do these restrictions throughout the 9 days like Ashkenazim do. They just do it during the week of Tisha B'Av, which means if Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos or on Nidcha the Sunday or Lachatchila on Sunday, then there's really no restrictions of the 9 days for them. Amar Rava, v'kodim dekodim nami kavachomer. Well, if that's the case, then you can make a kavachomer even if you're talking about the week before the week of Tisha B'Av. Why? The kavachomer would be a mama makam shemutcha also lisa v'litin muta le'aris. You have in that week. If we're saying then that this braisa is talking not about the week of Tisha B'Av, not about the week of Shabbos Nachamu, but the week before that, the week of Shabbos Chazayin. And the Braisa is saying that you don't do maso matzon, and yet, but you know, you don't do business, but you have mutal eiris, and you're allowed to do eirisin. Well, mokam from mutal lisiv litin. So in a place, namely during the 30 days, after the 7 days of Shiva, you're allowed to do business, and it's in mutal eiris. How much more so you should be allowed to do eirisin? So we're back to the question, why would Rabbi Yossi say not? The answer is loy tamed that Rabbi Yossi emakol noshim yisarisu. You're right. You have to change the wording. It's not that Rabbi Yossi is saying that any women can do erusin except for the almana. Ela emakol noshim yinosu. Rather, he's saying that any women are actually allowed to get married except for the almana because she's an avelus. There's no question. Just like we said that nisuin is also during the week of Tisha B'Av. So that now we don't have to say anymore that the Braita meant kodim to kodim. Now we could say the Braita is actually talking about the week of Tisha B'Av, the week that ends the part of the week that ends with Tisha B'Av, and where that Shabbos is Shabbos Nachamu. But and during that week you're not allowed to do Nisuin. So therefore that disposes of the Kavachomer. And the point is the less play the Rabbi Yossi lahavchin. Actually, the Gemara asks, the less play the Rabbi Yossi lahavchin. So you're telling me Rabbi Yossi does not have a problem with this whole business of Avchana? He doesn't require the. What's the whole point? We said that the whole point why we're saying that a woman's not allowed to get married during the 3 months is because if she gets pregnant, you're not going to know whether the child's from the first or the second husband. You're telling me Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold to that whole concept? That he's saying that normally you would be allowed to do Nisuyin, and the only reason you can't is because of the problem of Avelus? The answer is yes, less like, yeah, maybe Taki doesn't hold of it. The Ibo Yisema, or another possibility, well, Olam Islay, maybe he does really hold of it. The Ema, so rather let's change the wording again. Not that Rabbi Yossi is saying that any woman is allowed to get married except for when she's an avelus, but rather kol arutzes grushes yinasu. He's saying that any woman who was an arusa and then is divorced from the erusin is allowed to remarry, because similar to what Rabbi Yehuda had said in the Mishnah, that if they had only had erusin, then there's obviously no possibility that she's pregnant from her husband. They haven't been together yet. So therefore, there's no problem with her doing Nisuin with her next husband, because now if she turns up pregnant, we know it's from her second husband. Rabbi Yossi is taking basically the same view. So he's saying, if she's divorced, then she's allowed to get married right away. If she's an almana, then she's not allowed to because of Avelus, which later on, the Gemara is going to get to soon. The question is, if we're saying she's only an Arusa, why is she having Avelus for her husband anyway? And Arusa doesn't have to. But we'll get back to that later. But right now, we're still... We're going to have to get back to that. But meanwhile, what we have is that basically Rabbi Yossi is saying similar to Rabbi Yehuda. But Rabbi Yossi is saying similar to Rabbi Yehuda, and that's what we're going to have to find out what the difference is. Rabbi Yehuda had said that any woman who was an arusa is allowed to get married now within the 3 months, and any woman who was a nisua is allowed to do erusin. He's not worried about that people will say if you're allowed to do erusin, you're allowed to do nisuin. Rabbi Yossi basically holds the same thing. And the question, of course, becomes ihachi hainu Rabbi Yehuda. Well, then what's the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda? The answer is ikubenayim nisua le'oris. The nafkamina would be: is a woman who previously was married, is she allowed to do erusin? Namely, Rabbi Yehuda sava nisua asur le'oris. That Rabbi Yehuda is saying, since she was married before, yes, she might have been pregnant already, but nevertheless, she can do erusin with her new husband. We're not worried that erusin will lead to nisuin within the 3 months. Rabbi Yossi sava nisua asur le'oris. Whereas Rabbi Yossi holds that no, I'm being master a woman who was arusa that she can even get married. I'm not being master if a woman was previously married. Then then it's not like we said at the top of the Amud that maybe Rabbi Yossi doesn't hold of Havchana. He does hold of Havchana. Therefore, he's saying if Mela, if the woman was Arus, Havchana the three months to know in order to know whose baby it is. Mela, if she was an Arusa, then there's no reason to be machmir on her. She's obviously not pregnant. Let her go ahead and even get married to a new husband during the 3 months. If she was an Asua, though, then I'm not going to allow her to do Erusin, because that detail I am concerned about. That if she does Erusin, she may come to do Nisuin, and then you would have the problem of Havchana. As opposed to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that we're not worried about that confusion. Question is, the Savar Rabbi Yossi Nesua Asura Le'Oris. Why? You're telling me that Rabbi Yossi holds that a woman who was married to her first husband is not allowed to be Nesaris to her second husband during the 3 months? Well, Tanya, but we learn Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi, and we call Noshim Yisaris, so Chutzman Almana, Rabnei Ebel, where he says that all women are allowed to do Erisin except for an Almana because of Avelos. Vakama Ebel, Shalosh, Shalosh, Miyam, and how long does her Avelos last? 30 days. But none of them are allowed to get married until 3 months. It sounds like it means any of them, no matter what, whether she's a grusha, whether she's an amana, you always have they can't do anything until 3 months.
But he's
talking
about
Yeshua. No, but he said v'chulon implies that it means v'chulon. Yeah. So what's the problem? Hi, my kusha. So what exactly is the problem? You're asking from the fact that Rabbi Yossi is saying all women are allowed to do Erusin, implying whether they're Nesuas or not. What's the problem? So what? We have the same problem with our Mishnah, and with the Braisa is not any stronger than the Mishnah. And we said in the Mishnah, we explained before the Mishnah, according to the second explanation, where we said that Rabbi Yossi is concerned about the Havchana. We said that when Rabbi Yossi says "kol nashim yisarusu," doesn't mean all women. It just means if she's an arusha who's a grusha. So he does not allow it for women who were previously married, because again we said that we're concerned about confusing erusin and nisuin. So the braisa can mean the same thing. How can that? Kol arusha is grusha, you not do. Yes, the braisa is saying "kol nashim." It doesn't have to mean all women across the board. It means one specific subset of women.
So we compare this.
There's a braisa. It could be the same way as we find for the Mishnah. We can find for the braisa. Yeah. Let me say first. So no, the question rather is from the second part of Braisa. The Braisa finishes off that Rabbi Yossi is saying that they're not allowed to get married until 3 months, which implies it's in suvi hudloi ha'itzurusi shapir domi. So they're not allowed to get married, but evidently they're allowed to do erusin. You just said that Rabbi Yossi is saying that a nesua can't do erusin because erusin might be confused with nesuin. What we see over here, the implication of the Braisa, is that she's saying that they're not allowed to get married, but they're allowed to do Erusin. So then, that contradicts what we just said. So we're back to the question. We're back to the question. What exactly is the difference between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda's Shitta? Amar Rava, Tritz ve'emahachi. Okay, let's correct and for the Braisa and say that it says like this. Rabbi Yossi, kol arusis grushas yinasu. Any woman who was an arusa and then got divorced is allowed to get remarried. Chutz min almana, mepnei ibul, unless she's an almana because of avelus. V'kama ibul shalosh shloshim yom. How long is the avelus? 30 days. Unesuris lo yisarsu. However, a woman who was already married or was an esua is not allowed to do erusin. Unlike Rabbi Yehuda, who says we're not worried about that, Rabbi Yossi is worried. Adjihela and shleisha chadashim until 3 months pass. So in other words, so we're changing. We're changing when the braisa, the original version of the braisa said v'cholon lo yinasu. Instead, we're changing it that lo yisarsu. We're saying we're not talking about nesuin. We're talking about they shouldn't do erusin during the 3 months. Rabbi Yossi is concerned that if you allow them to do Erusin, they may come to do Nisuin. So again, Mela, if she was an Arusa, if she was never pregnant from before, you have no problem allowing her even to get married. But because then there's no issue with Havchana. But he is concerned that if you allow to do Erusin, you may come to do Nisuin. Therefore, if she was in the sewer from beforehand, she may have been pregnant from her first husband, you can't allow her to do even Erusin with her second husband. That's the difference between him and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says we're not concerned that Erusin will be confused with Nisuin, therefore Nisuin is allowed to do Erusin. That's as we said, yes. Now, though, the more basic question, if she's widowed from Erusin, is there any avelus for her husband? We have this a couple of weeks ago. Ishtei arusa le'oinin v'lo mitamila, that if a kohen who's orus to his wife, he's not, or anybody who's orus to his wife, he's not oinin, and if he's a kohen v'lo mitamila, he can't be mitame for her, because a kohen's only allowed to become tame for his full wife, for a married wife. V'chein he lo yenenet v'lo mitamila, she also does not do aninus, and the assumption is, if we're saying there's no aninus, then there's no avelus either. So she doesn't do aninus for him. She's not mitame for him, which Rashi had said before when we had this on the chotes. Two possibilities. One is it means she doesn't have to, as opposed to if they were fully married, she would have a mitzvah too. Two is it means we're talking about during the time, during the Yom Tovim, chayavad motar atzma beregel, then she has an obligation to remain tahor in order that she'll be able to come to the Beth Mikdash, and therefore she wouldn't be mitame for her arus. In a sikha, by the way, that Rebbe pointed out once, the implication of that Rashi is actually that the reason why chayiv adam l'tar asma b'regel is not really because of the inyan of coming to the Beis Mikdash. Women aren't chayiv and aliyah l'regel anyway, as we learned in Chagiga. It's rather a general din about Yom Tov, that you're supposed to be a tahor on the regel. And the Rebbe points out that whether or not you bring kavanas. And the Rebbe points out the nafkamina of it. It means that it applies even nowadays when there's no Beis Mikdash, for example. Yeah. Anyway. And the Braita continues, Mesa Eina Yosha, if she dies during the Erusin, he doesn't yarshin her, because the husband only yarshins his wife when they're fully married. Neshu Govak Subasa, and if he dies, then she's entitled to collect her ksuba. We said, again, Rashi had brought that normally that wouldn't be the case. Normally she's only entitled to collect the ksuba once they're married, once Nisuin has been done. That's why we read the ksuba over there before the Nisuin. But if you wrote in the ksuba that she's entitled to collect it from the erusin, then yeah, she's entitled to collect it at this point. Anyway, so the point is that the point is that obviously there's no issue of avelus there if she's an arusa. So you can't say that when Rabbi Yossi is saying that anybody's allowed to except for an almona because of avelus, and we said that by an almona over here we mean that she's an arusa. If she's an arusa, there's no avelus. Ella Tanoi. He said, no, rather we have to say that there is in fact a machloikas tanoim about this point. When we say we started the discussion by saying, isn't there a kal v'chomer that if you're allowed to do erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av, then why shouldn't you be able to do it during this time of avelus? It's a machloikas tanoim, actually, whether you're allowed to do erusin at that time. The Tanya, merash chodesh vadatainis ha'om matin miskeim, from a chodesh till the fast, people reduce their business, miliso militin, from buying and selling, milivnes milintoya, from building and planting, or milioris or milisa, or from doing erusin or marriage, so here we see erusin. Then continues the braita, or it's actually Mishnah, Shabbos shachal tishabav v'saycha also v'sapro l'chabbos. During the week in which Tisha B'Av itself falls out, aside from all of that, you're also not allowed to take haircuts or do laundry. And then we had a day that the entire month was also, because we said over there, because it's a pasuk chadsha. And we had this in Tainus, yeah. So we see from that that we have one opinion, which was the braith that we brought at the beginning of the sogya, that said that during the week of Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to do erusin. This braith is saying you're not allowed to. But there you go then. So it's a machlokas tanoim. So the same way then you could have that Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah who's saying that we're not talking about an arusa anymore. We're talking about a real mesua. Why is she not allowed to do erusin during the 30 days? Is based on this opinion that just like according to this opinion, you're not allowed to do it during 9 days. We don't know. It's two different braises, but evidently the second braise goes according to Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. Maski for Rabashi, but Rabashi asks on that. Why? Mimai de la'oris la'oris mamish. Who says that the second braisa, when it says you're not allowed to do erusin, who says it literally means not to do erusin? Maybe it just means you're not allowed to make a suda for the erusin. Because the erusin itself is not really, Rashi says, is not really such a simcha. A suda to erusin is a simcha.
It says erusin, it doesn't say suda.
What's the implication? The implication is you're supposed to be staying away from things that involve simcha. The erusin themselves is not really a simcha. It's a suda to erusin.
What's
erusin? Kiddushin, yeah. Kiddushin. Yes, kiddushin.
It's a big simcha.
Well, nowadays we combine together Kedushin and Nisuin, right?
But okay.
In those days, no, so they would make a Suda for the Erisin, that would be the Simcha. The actual Erisin, when he gives her the ring and then says, Hareach Mekudesh, so you know, we find cases, the Gemara discusses in many cases in Kedushin, where people would just meet each other on the street and do that, you know? Okay. But I mean, think of, Lahavdil, think of how it is in the Goyish world, you know, when the guy gets down on one knee, you know, will you marry me? That itself is not the big simcha. The big simcha is afterwards they make a party for it, you know? Yeah. Hola oris chape dummy. Maybe the braita would be saying that you are in fact allowed to do erasing. And not the suda. So in that case, you'd still have nothing that matches Rabbi Yossi in our Mishnah. I think my asti hachi. Well, if you're going to say it like that, then what does it mean? Milisa linafi nami lemeb sudas nisurin huda also halisa shapudami. So what would you say? The same thing when it talks about nisurin. Would you say it means you're not allowed to make the wedding party, but you're allowed to do the actual wedding? There's no question. You can't do that.
The wedding itself is
a simcha. Right. Yeah. And the Gemara asked hachi hashta that exactly. How could you compare the two? Bishleim nisurin v'loy suda ika simcha. The nisurin, even without a suda, is still a simcha. El Erisin, boy, suddenly, because Simcha, the Erisin without a Suda is not really such a Simcha. So yes, there is a logical reason for Ravashi to be for us to be distinguishing that when the Braisa says you're not allowed to do Erisin, means only the Suda says Erisin, as opposed to Nisuin means you can't do the Nisuin at all.
Doing whatever you look at it, it's always the same.
Right, and in fact, that's the halacha. The halacha is you are allowed to be mekadesh. You are allowed to do kedushin to get engaged nowadays, because nowadays we don't really do the kedushin separately. But you're allowed to get engaged even during the 9 days. You just can't make the suda then.
You say that erusin stronger than just.
No, it is stronger than a modern day engagement. That's true, but it's still the same point. There's a concept. I think we learned about it there in Tainus. You don't want shema yikadmenu acher. Somebody else might get her first. Before you do, if you don't hurry up and get things moving, so therefore it's allowed. But that plus the fact that it's not really a simcha by itself, just yeah. Anyway, so we're back to the question. Why is Rabbi Yossi saying in our Mishnah that there's a problem with Erusin during Avelus? If we just said that there's no problem during the week of Tisha B'Av. Ella Amar Ravashi, shiny Avelus Chadashim Avelus Yishana. There's a difference between a new Avelus, where it's a fresh thing that her husband just died, versus an old Avelus for the Korban, which happened a long time ago. And also, Vashiny Avelus Tudabim Avelus Yachav. There's a difference between the Avelus of the public, one that applies to the whole Jewish people, and an Avelus of a Yachid. So, what does that mean? So, first of all, the fact that it's an avelus of the rabbin, many mafroshim point out the famous expression "sardas rabbim chatzin nechama." When many people share a sorrow, that itself is half of a nechama already. So, what does it mean? So, Rashi, it's half of a nechama. It's already half of a comfort that so many other people are bearing the burden with you. So, Rashi says that both of these things what the Gemara is basically saying on both of those grounds. Therefore, Tisha B'Av is much more lenient. Then, during the week of Tisha B'Av, you might be able to do Erusin, but during the 30 days after a woman's husband died, no, she can't.
Because of this fact.
Because of these two factors, that one's of Rabim, one's of Yachid, and one's old versus one's new. Tosfos has a few questions about that, one of them being that we still haven't really disposed of the Kal V'Chomer. We still said before that there's a Kal V'Chomer. If you're allowed to do business, why are you allowed to do you're not allowed to do business, but you're allowed to do Erusin during the week of Tisha B'Av. So why is it over here it's the other way around? You're allowed to do business during the 30 days, but you're not allowed to do Erusin. So Tosfos has a different explanation that we're saying two different factors. The fact that this is an Avelus, the fact that over here we're talking Avelus Chadasha makes it more serious. That's why you can't do Erusin. The fact that it's Avelus Yachid versus Avelus Dudabim, though, makes it more lenient. Therefore, you can do business. That's the difference. In other words, in a way, Tosfos is saying, in a way, Tisha B'Av is more chomer because it applies to the whole Jewish people. On the other hand, it's less chomer because it's an old thing as opposed to a new thing. And therefore...
So they
hold of Rabbim, obviously, but they're saying, unlike we're saying that Rabbim, according to Rashi, Rabbim is a reason to be Makel, according to Tosfos, Rabbim is a reason to be Machmir. And therefore, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, we're Machmir on business, but Makel on Erusin, and in the case of Avelus, we do the other way around. Mishnah says, if you have four brothers, Nisurin Arba Nashim, they're married to four different women, here we're not talking about relatives, any complications like that, each one is married to a woman from a different family. So when all four brothers die, if the eldest of the brothers wants to be miyabim all four women, then he's entitled to. We don't say, in other words, you know, give your other brother the chance. He's entitled to do everything. If somebody was married to two women and then he died, this is a basic concept which we've had all the way from the beginning of the sechta. When one of the brothers does yibum or chalitza with one of the women, then that happens all the rest of them. If one of the women was kosher and one was posel, which we said, for example, we had this a couple of times, and he said lamaskana that it meant, for example, if one of them had previously been a grusha or a chalala or what have you, and therefore she's posel to kohen anyway, and one is not. If the brother is going to be doing chalitza, then he should do it with the one who's posel, because that way he won't posel her further to a kohen; she's already posel. But if he's doing yibum, miyabim l'ksheira, then he can do yibum with either one. He can do yibum with the ksheira, he can do with the psula as well, but he can do with either one. There's no preference there. Because there's nothing for possible anyway. So the Gemara asks, Abba Achan Sakadantach, what do you mean four brothers? If there's only four brothers and all of them are dead, then there's no yibum. Ela'ema, Abba Me'achan, it means there were a lot of brothers. Among them, four of them died, and then there's the rest of them. And then the Mishnah had said Horoshus B'yada, that the fifth brother then will be allowed to marry all of them. Would Beis Din actually allow him to do that? V'hatanya, but we learn in a Braisa, the Pasuk says when it comes to Chalitza, V'karu lo ziknei iroi, the elders of the city, meaning the Beis Din should call him, which means Hein v'lo shlucha, they personally, not a shliach, have to call him. Some of the Horoshim say actually it doesn't mean to call him, they're allowed to send a shliach Beis Din to call him, but it means the advice that we're going to say next, they personally have to give him, they can't delegate somebody else to. The Dibru, according to that way of looking at it, means they're allowed to send a shliach to summon him to Beis Din, but then when it comes to advising him whether to do Yibum or Chalitza, they have to talk with themselves. Yeah. The Dibru, I love it, says they speak to him. It means that they have to give him advice suitable for him and also for her. For example, if he's young and she's old, who's Zakin Vihi Yalder, or he's old and she's young. Then they tell him, Malachetzo Yalder, Malachetzo Skena, what are you doing marrying somebody who's a completely different age from you? Better you should marry somebody closer to your own age. Don't bring arguments into your house when you have a couple that are so different in age. It's likely to cause problems. In other words, better in that case, better do chalitza.
Right, but isn't there any total rule? And you can do it with a younger woman, and you cannot do it with an older woman.
If he's old already, okay, so maybe a little younger, fine, but not somebody who's half his age. So the point is, by the same token over here, if you have one Yavam is proposing to do Yibum with all four women, that's probably not the best idea. Pashas is going to have a hard time supporting them, for one thing. Why would Beis Din allow him to do that? Better they should be telling him, no, you marry one, let your brother marry the next one, etc. Or just do Chalitza with all of them. The answer is, let's do it. Okay, the mission is talking about, he has enough money to be able to support them all. The question is, well, in that case, why is the Mishnah saying only four? The same thing would apply if there were more, yeah? The answer is, Eitza Tova Kamashmalon. The Mishnah is just still giving us good advice. Dalad Ein Tfeiloi, you should not do it if there are more than four. Ki Heichid Nimtye Oina B'chodesh. That way each one gets to Oina at least once a month. Now, what do we mean by that? So Rashi says like this. We learn in the Gemara talks about Tzubas, different people, depending what kind of business they're in, have different Oinas. You have a person, for example, who just lives off a trust fund, his owner is every day. A person who works outside of the city is twice a week, whatever it is, somebody chachamim once a week, sailors is once every 6 months. The point is, therefore, Rashi is saying, the Rambam says something similar, that if a person has more than one wife, then the owner is split among them. So in other words, if, let's say, for example, Talmud Chacham, whose normal owner is once a week, every Friday night, if he has four wives, means that each one he has to be with once a month, one out of every four Friday nights. So therefore, it's an Eitz HaTovah, don't make it that each one is going to get an owner less often than once a month. The Rambam puts it similarly. The Rambam says, let's say even the guy is a sailor, where his owner is only once every 6 months, because normally he's out on his ship. But still, at least his wife should be able to get an owner once every 2 years. In other words, it shouldn't be more than that. It shouldn't be. The Rashbash, actually, one of the early Achronim, has a slightly different take on it. He says the owner we're talking about over here is not necessarily being intimate, having relations. Just the common thing in those days, if a person has more than one wife, he lives with one for 1 week, then he goes and lives with the next one for another week, and so forth. Just like this, also, you know, same similar idea. Each one of them should at least get a week out of every month with him. No, a man's allowed to be married to more than one wife.
All right, well.
Well, not a doubt, because of Chayav Nevi'im. But actually, we'll finish off of it here. The Yerushalmi tells an interesting story in this connection. There was a man who had 12 brothers, and all of them died childless. 12 brothers, and all of them died childless. Actually, the Reb Reuven Margolius points out, based on various other sources, that this person wasn't just a standard person, it was Bar Kapara, the famous Uli Amora. Anyway, so he has 12 zikas. So he comes to Rebbe to ask him what to do. And Rebbe says, come on, 12 wives, you're not going to be able to support them. All of them wanted to marry him, though. None of them just wanted to do chalitza and marry somebody else. So they said, you know what, Rebbe, each of us will support the household for 1 month. Okay, so what's going to happen with the Ibra month, then, Bar Kapara says. Bar Kapara, I can't afford to support all them, so fine, each of them will support the household for 1 month. What happens the Ibra month? Okay. So Rebbe says, fine, if they're willing to do each month, I'll do the Ibra month. When it comes in Ibra year, once every 2 or 3 years, I'll supply for that. So what happens? So they all go, Rebbe offers to support them, for the Ibra month. So they all go away, so Bar Kapara indeed does Ibra with all 12 of them. 3 years later, 12 women come together with 36 kids, and they stand outside Rebbe. They stand outside Rebbe's house, and somebody tells Rebbe, "There's a bunch of kids downstairs asking for you." So Rebbe looks out the window. What do you guys need?
Support.
They said, "It's the Ibra month now. We need our month support." And Rebbe provided it, Taka. But one thing is, Reuven Margolius points out in this connection with in Brachas and the whole sugya over there about dreams. There's one case over there where Bar Kapara comes to Rebbe. He says, "I had a very strange dream. I dreamt that my hands got chopped off." And Rebbe says to him, "That's a siman that dream portends that you won't have to work for a living." So Reuven Margolius says that's how this was fulfilled. He ended up marrying these 12 wives, where they're supporting the family for the whole time, and Rebbe is supporting for the Ibra month. So Rebbe, so Bar Kapara, Taka didn't have to work for a living.
When's the story?
There's the story itself in the Yerushalmi on this very Mishnah.